No matter how young and healthy you are, life can be full of unpleasant surprises. And without health insurance, even a short hospital stay could set you back thousands of dollars. If you qualify for expanded Medicaid, you can get coverage through Passport Health Plan. Find out if you qualify. Call 855-459-6328 or go online at kynect.ky.gov. Choose Passport, the plan that takes the time to care.
Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder, molesting, running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am podcast network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
Back once again, and the Rusty Satellite Show continues its merry quest towards finishing up its first year. This is Rick Redding. I'm having a lot of fun doing the show. Always out looking for the most interesting people in the Ville to have on the show as guest, and we have another great pair of guests this week. Very happy to say. Lots going on in Louisville, Kentucky as springtime approaches. You know, we did have more snow days this week, and I'll be talking about that with my first guest. And looking ahead, there's a lot of sports and other things happening, and that's what my second guest is about. So here we are, first week of March. And glad to be with you. I appreciate your downloading the podcast and checking out the site. As you know, you hear the lovely Diane say every week, you can check out photos of my guest on RustySatelliteShow.com. I also write occasional stories on LouisvilleKY.com, so I encourage you to check those out. But let's get on with the show. Later in the show, after my first guest, I'll have my top five stories of the week, things that have caught my eye and are worth commenting on, I suppose. But first of all, I'll tell you my second guest. Please stay tuned in the show because I have one of my favorite colleagues, friends, Carl Schmidt of the Louisville Sports Commission is a guest on the show this week. I went down to his office downtown and saw a spectacular view from the 23rd floor of the BB&T building, and had a nice conversation with Carl about sports and business and his background, his experience in Louisville. But first, you know, we had a snow day this week. We actually had two, and you know, certainly, I guess the first one was legitimate. We've had now 11 or 12 snow days this year. The kids in JCPS are going to be going to school till June 12th, and to people like that I talked to, certainly Monday, legitimate snow day. It was very difficult to traverse the conditions in the morning. The traffic was awful. But Tuesday, it hadn't snowed since, you know, for more than 24 hours. And Tuesday, they called off school again. And so that was my number one thing that I wanted to know from Debbie Westland. And Debbie is has been a Jefferson County School Board member for I think she told me 8 years, and she is District 3, which is the district I live in. It encompasses Linden, and Debbie has I've always since I started covering the school system really had a lot of respect for Debbie and her point of view, even if we don't always agree, but I usually agree with her positions. And I was just curious as to what was going on with the snow days. And I found out that there's a lot more going on with JCPS that I thought my listeners would be interested in. So let's take a listen. This is I went over to my favorite coffee shop in Linden and sat down and talked for a while with Debbie Westland.
Learn about the movers and shakers in the Louisville business scene with Startup, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. A new episode every Tuesday at Louisville.am.
And welcome back to the Rusty Satellite Show. And I'm here with Debbie Westland, a member of the Jefferson County School Board. And, you know, I guess the joke I would say, Debbie, is that, you know, I see a little bit of snow on the ground, yet the kids are actually in school today, right?
Right. on my way here, I saw several school buses, and I was like, yay, pulled over and cheered them on. I was glad to see them, right? All right.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a member of the school board, I know you don't have, you know, you're not making the call every day, but I know you probably get a lot of feedback from the public about school days. You know, and let's just talk about yesterday. That was Tuesday of this week. It snowed Sunday. We had all day Monday, yet Tuesday we didn't have school. You know, what do you tell people that are upset about that?
What I tell people is that we have staff who are out at 3 a.m. every night before we make the call in every bus compound area, so different parts of the county. They drive the roads. If there are too many roads that are impassable or too slick, they will pass that on to the superintendent and she'll make the call. They also look at weather, but as you say, yesterday the weather was fine. It was the roads. In fact, I asked for our staff to provide the board a map of the county and where are these areas where the roads are bad mm-hmm. for longer. And you could see there are some patches on different parts of the county, not really in any one place, that are impassable. And it's too hard to get to kids' houses to get them for school. And so I think we have to have a long-term plan to deal with some of those areas, why they stay so icy and bad.
Right. Yeah, because it's really, I guess the community, when we're talking about it, it's just like, you know, we really don't understand, because all of us are of a certain age. We remember walking to school in the snow, and we know how, you know, they never canceled snow back mm-hmm. back in the day, but
you know, people don't do that anymore.
There's no walking.
You know, we provide quite a personalized service. Not too many kids walk very far, even to the school bus stop.
Right.
And part of that is safety. A lot of parents work. A lot of kids are alone getting to the school bus. And so we provide pretty good service, and we try to be ultra safe, and that's why these days have been called. Of course, in some more rural counties in the state, I watched the news last night, saw several counties closed.
Right.
And they're up to like 20 days. We're at 11 snow days.
At 11 days, and so now, you know, the jokes are all about us going to school till July, but mm-hmm. but at this point, from what I've read, we don't have to. We're just going to June 12th.
Right.
And is that as far as we can go?
Well,
heaven forbid we get more.
We'll just have to cross that bridge when we come to it. Something I would like to say is that there are a couple of bills in the legislature that would forgive some days. There are two or three. One, probably the one that forgives the least days, is HB 383, would allow us to take back 2 days, would allow us to count a couple of days where we started late. And so we are going to make a push for our legislature to pass that, because our, you know, we can't go all summer long.
Sure.
We're beyond where we warned people that makeup days might go.
Right.
So we're starting to hit into vacations. Kids want to graduate. Kids aren't focused on school those last few days.
Okay, well, let's move on a little bit. And Debbie, I know that you've been on the school board for some time, and I've seen those meetings where, you know, citizens come and they complain. A lot of people like to complain about the schools. And it just seems like, I know that, you know, sometimes being on the school board seems like a thankless position. But what motivates you to do this work?
Well, it may sound sappy, but public education is the most important thing we do. I love doing it. It's hard work, there's no question. And we do hear complaints, but you know, most people have a great experience in the public schools, and we deal with problems as they come up. People don't take time to come to board meetings and say, hey, you guys are doing great, or I love my school. But there are a lot of people like that. And you find that out when you go to schools and you visit schools and you talk with kids and you have parent meetings or you go to community meetings, you will hear more of that. But school board meetings, it's generally a place where someone will come and when they reach the end of their rope or they don't understand something and they can get an
answer. Or you're raising taxes again.
Or we're considering taxes every August like we do. That will happen and it's coming up, so you all can mark your calendars. And late summer, and not to take that lightly, we know we try to have a really good, tight budget, but we have to fund schools, and we have lots of needs, and it takes money for extra time,
sure.
Extra resources.
And your background, you come into this, I know you have a background related to education. Tell me just a little bit about your background and how you came to be on the school board.
Well, I moved to Louisville with my husband and my two-year-old daughter in 1995, so I'm not a native. I can't say I went to high school here or anything like that, but I've raised my daughter here, so it's home. And I have a background in public policy. I worked in government and local, state, and federal level for several years. And when I moved to Louisville, I got involved in my daughter's school. I was the president of the PTA and on their elementary, and then I was on the SBDM at her middle school. And I decided to run for the school board. I thought that'd be a place where I could serve.
Okay, and you, now how long have you been on the board now?
I'm in my eighth year.
Eighth year, mm-hmm. Wow. That's really something. Now, I know one thing you told me you're doing new is that the board members are going out in the community and holding events to basically listen to what the concerns are of citizens, similar to what I guess the mayor does. And I know you just had one of those. Tell me what you got out of that.
You know, these community conversations are great, I think, because at board meetings we tend to focus on the big high-level issues like achievement scores across the board or contracts or the budget. But these community meetings let people say, here's the experience I'm having at my school, or here's what I care about, and I'm a parent of a child. And what I heard about last night at Crosby Middle was that Crosby's a popular school, and it's very crowded. And that can hinder its performance or safety, and parents are concerned that it's getting too tight. And so we listened to that a little bit, and that's an issue we'll have to address.
You know, parents, I guess, and just to clarify what we're talking about, your district covers, it's District 3, right?
District 3, it covers a good part of the northeast part of Louisville. It takes the area around Ballard all the way over to Eastern, 9 elementaries, 3 middle schools, 2 high schools, Ballard
okay.
and Eastern. And the Westport Teenage Parent Program, which is a great place, too.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I should have, I've got a student at Eastern. I should have come up with some good complaints for you.
I can tell you what it is, traffic around Eastern. You know, when you have these big schools and 2 lane roads leading up to them, and when the weather's bad and more people drive their kids, that could be a problem.
Yeah, I've been there.
We work really hard to try to come up with options, but sometimes the option is just to wait in a line.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've been there?
I've done that. It's not really that much fun, and mm-hmm. you know, you curse and you wonder, why does this have to be that way? I don't know. So so okay. Are there any outside of District 3? What are the things that really consume time? I know I talked to David Jones. He told me that the board has to go through all this paperwork and the meetings. You know, it's a lot of work. It's really a part-time job, right? So what are the other issues that are commanding a lot of your attention?
Well, what has always commanded our attention in my time on the board, and I think before that, is student achievement. And people have probably heard those words so much, but they really mean something. And we have some achievement, a big achievement gap between kids for them who have other struggles and kids, middle-class families. We have big gaps, and we have to provide resources and services to those kids. We're held accountable to reaching those kids, and we should be. So we talk about that all the time, from providing extra funding for extended day, to getting tutors, to new programs, to getting mentors, to things like Everyone Reads. We spend a lot of time trying to help all children. We have 101,000 kids in public schools, and 12,000 homeless kids.
Right.
You know, so we have lots of challenges, and that's what we spend our time on. And yeah, there's some administrative things we have to do, and that's kind of a check and balance system that's important, but it doesn't take that much time.
Okay.
In my
yeah,
view.
And you know, like when I talk to people, and you know, a lot of people, you know, have their complaints about the public schools, and say it's not, well, I believe, you know, you can get a great education in public schools. You know, the numbers may be brought down by the low end, but the top end, I had two kids go through Manual. They're as high achieving. That you know, they had a great experience. I think Luke is having a great experience at Eastern. So I think, you know, if you want to have a good experience, a good educational experience in Jefferson County, you can, right?
Right. You know, and I told parents last night, every school has distinguished and proficient kids. That's the designation we talk about all the time in education.
Right.
Every school. They may not have the largest amount, Manual, because they attract a lot of high-achieving students in one place. They do great. But there are other schools. My daughter went to Atherton to high school. So it was her choice in the International Baccalaureate program, and she did great there, and she's a Dean's List student in college and had several scholarships, and she did great. So we have lots of good options. We really
do. So parents
do.
Really, you know, I think it has to do, and you probably have opinions on this outside of your school board duties, but, you know, I think parenting is the real key.
Parenting is the key. Parents have to be partners. They have to make sure kids do their work. They have to encourage kids to behave. They have to be a backup for teachers when teachers need kids. Most parents do that. Some parents can't. Some parents won't. It's another thing that schools have to deal with, and teachers. And you know, you're one teacher in a classroom, and you've got 28 kids, and one is behaving so badly that the other kids can't learn. You've got to have the parent with you to get that taken care
of. Right. Okay, we got time for one more question. I'm going to ask you about your... not your boss, but the boss of the public school system. There's always controversy surrounding the superintendent, but what's your opinion? I guess Donna Hargens has been there, what, 2 years now?
Dr. Hargens is in her third year.
She
will finish it up here pretty soon. She started in the summer of 2011, so math right? Yep, so coming up on 3 years. She has done amazing things. She restructured central office, made cuts there. You know, we always heard central office is so big. We did make some cuts there. We put more resources in schools, which School Sarah is making a difference, and we'll monitor that. We want to do that. She's laser-focused on achievement in our strategic plan, which calls for all students to graduate prepared for college and career, and she says that all over the community, and I think she's got people talking about the public schools.
Okay. Well, good. Well, you know, like I said, in the past, the school board, I guess, really hires and fires the superintendent.
That's right. That's one of our most important jobs. We shouldn't micromanage, and we don't, this is not our job, as you say, but one of our big responsibilities is to hire the superintendent and evaluate them annually to make sure that they're responding to the community needs and getting our kids where they need to be.
Okay. So, all right. Well, Debbie Westland, thanks for joining me on the Rusty Satellite Show. And let's hope we don't have any more snow days, right?
Oh, let's hope and pray that we don't have those. Thanks a lot, Rick.
You love Louisville. You want Louisville when and where you want it? There's something new every day at louisville.am.
No matter how young and healthy you are, life can be full of unpleasant surprises. And without health insurance, even a short hospital stay could set you back thousands of dollars. If you qualify for expanded Medicaid, you can get coverage through Passport Health Plan. Find out if you qualify. Call 855-459-6328 or go online at kynect.ky.gov. Choose Passport, the plan that takes the time to care.
All right, and a big thank you to Debbie Westland of the Jefferson County School Board for coming in and talking with me on the Rusty Satellite Show. Now is the time, before we get to our second guest, and now is the time of the show. I always talk about the top five stories of the week, stories that catch my eye. And you know, lately, sure, I'm sort of a progressive. I guess I'm a liberal, a Democrat. But some of these stories really get to me. It seems like Kentucky is on a race to be the least progressive or most backward state in the union with some things that happen. So a couple of our stories this week in the news go to that point. And the first one, I'm surprised I haven't heard more people talking about this, but on Sunday in the Courier-Journal, great story by Andrew Wolfson, And Andy writes about a program throughout that the Kentucky Baptist Convention is promoting throughout the state. And is that his the spokesman for the thing? Andy wrote a great lead. It says, in an effort, its spokesman is described as, quote, outreach to rednecks. The Kentucky Baptist Convention is leading Second Amendment celebrations where churches around the state give away guns as door prizes to lure in non-believers in hopes of converting them to Christ. I don't know. I mean, I'm just flabbergasted by that whole idea. So what is happening around the state? And the other thing is, it's successful. Apparently, the people that were interviewed for the story talk about how they're basically giving guns away as door prizes to get people to come to church. And then they say it's successful because the people that do come to church sometimes make professions of faith, they call them. There were 50 of these events last year, and most of them were in Kentucky. You know, I wish I had some of the writers for like the Bill Maher show or Jon Stewart to pick up this story. It's just amazing to me that outreach to rednecks is what they without shame call this program, and the program draws. You know, most of the churches mentioned in the story on the days they have the gun giveaways, their attendance is like double, triple, quadruple their normal attendance. They've also given away steak dinner, so I'm making a big deal about the handguns because I'm really amazed at the political capital that any issue involving guns has in this state. You may recall a few weeks ago I talked, one of my top five stories was about the idea that there's legislation in Kentucky being decided in Frankfort about whether you should be able to bring guns into bars. And the big debate is whether the person with gun can drink or not while he's got the gun in the bar. So there are stories about in Kentucky about whether school teachers should get guns and all that. So anyway, that's an amazing story to me. I'm sorry that I live in a place where this is actually possible. I'm sorry. And my religious friends, I certainly respect everybody's right to believe what they will believe. But golly, to give away guns as a lure to get people to come to church, it seems like it's a little bit over the top. So anyway, that's my first story this week. The second thing I want to talk about is there has been a lot of talk about this. And again, this is a sign of Kentucky's, backwardness. I think when history looks back, one of the things that Jack Conway said when he made his decision this week, he had a press conference where he said that, as you know, there in 2004, Kentucky enacted a ban on gay marriage, and and Judge John Hayburn in Louisville this week upheld a ruling that found that that basically said that in Kentucky the courts, the legal system must recognize couples who are the same sex and got married in other states, that Kentucky has to recognize that. And this has caused an unbelievable amount of anguish, I guess, for the haters of gays in the world. And it's related. And Conway said that his conscience wouldn't allow him to support this type of discrimination. So Conway said that he believes that history will be on his side. And a lot of things have been written about this case. And one of the key points is that discriminated groups, that gays are among the last discriminated groups in this country. If you look back in American history, there was discrimination early on against women. They weren't allowed to vote for a long time. There was discrimination, of course, against African Americans and blacks. And that was a dismal, dark part of our history as a country, slavery, and then later in the 60s, the civil rights battle. And now we have gay rights, and people are just determined to deny these people, gay people, the right to marry and enjoy the legal benefits that come from marriage. And it amazes me that that there's so much division on this issue in our country, and especially in our state. Now, just so you know what the story is, Conway announced as Attorney General that he would not file suit opposing the ruling that Hayburn made favoring gays. And what happened was, and this is very discouraging, everybody that's paying attention to this issue that is on the side of fairness to gays was celebrating it. Conway, I don't know what time it was, about 10 o'clock the other morning, had a press conference, made this announcement, and like 7 minutes later, our governor, who I've never been a fan of this governor, but Governor Beshear came out and announced that since Conway won't step up to the plate and fight this law, that he was going to appoint an attorney in order to represent the state in this issue. So certainly that was a disappointment. So if you're putting out, if you're handing out black hats and white hats, in my view, give a big black one to Governor Steve Beshear and give credit and a white hat to Jack Conway, our attorney general, for basically standing up. And that's the way I feel about that. All right, on to a lighter topic, but on the topic of same-sex marriage, I mentioned last week that the Actors Theater is underway with the Humana Festival of New American Plays. I was fortunate enough to be able to go and critique a play called Partners there. You can see my review of it on LouisvilleKY.com. And I just wanted to say I just thought it was a wonderful performance. The story was one about a gay couple, and one of the guys was best friends with the wife in this married couple, this heterosexual couple. And in the story, in my view, was really not about being gay or anything like that, although it's a central theme. The lesson, I guess, of the play is about money and the effect of money on relationships, on the way people feel about things. We have an old saying in the news business, and that is it's always about the money. It was one of the first things I learned when I got to Business First. And really, most of the stories that you come across in the world are about that topic. So it's always about the money. I encourage you to go there. I'm going to see another play this week called The Christians. Looking forward to that. Actors Theater, Humana Festival. It's one of the best things that we can count on coming to the city every year. So story number four on my list of five, my top five this week, is we now have a candidate for governor in the election that will happen in November of 2015. And that is a familiar face to Louisville residents. It's Hal Heiner. He's a Republican. He is, you may recall that he was a Metro Councilman for many years. He gave up his seat to run for mayor against Greg Fisher. Came very close to winning. Very, very tight battle. Heiner announced this week that he was indeed, as has been rumored, that he will run for governor in 2015. We don't know who he'll be up against. Rumor has it that Agriculture Commissioner James Comer will oppose him on the Republican side. The Democrats have a wide open field. It's among those that are rumored to be have their eye on the governor's mansion is Jack Conway, the aforementioned attorney general. And you know, I guess I would just say his decision this week on the same-sex marriage issue took a little bit of political courage from Jack, because basically you take sides in the same-sex marriage battle. It's some of the statistics are that 60% or so of Kentuckians are on the opposition to same-sex marriage side. So whatever the numbers are, I'm not sure, but it took some political courage for Conway to come out and say what he said. So that may or may not affect his it will affect his candidacy for governor. Whether it'll be positive or negative sort of remains to be seen. Okay, my last story on a lighter note, let's talk about sports a little bit. Of course, you know, I had my guest Shoni Schimmel last week, and unfortunately, we were all fired up about the game at the Yum Center against Connecticut on Monday, and the Lady Cards, I tell you, that Connecticut team is the most dominant team in sports in my memory, in my life. I don't know that any any team in any sport has been as dominant as this Connecticut team, and Louisville, you know, didn't play that badly. They lost by 20, which is about half of the average margin of victory for this Connecticut team. So the good news for the Lady Cards, they may get another shot at Connecticut in the conference tournament or in the NCAA tournament. They lost to Connecticut in the final last year by 33. And so it's not over yet for Shoni Schimmel and her gang. So hopefully that'll turn up. But the big news in sports this week, I think, is up the road in Lexington. And if you saw, or if you know, you know, what we're seeing is not about what's going on the basketball floor as much as what's going on in terms of philosophy and approach to building a college basketball powerhouse. And what we're finding out, I think, the Kentucky team this year was much ballyhooed. These freshmen were the best, really the best AAU individual players in the country, gathered on this Kentucky team, and at the start of the season, we thought they were going to go 40-0. They're so talented. Oh, they're so talented. They're going to be so great. Well, guess what? They're not. They're pretty good freshmen. I don't think that a lot of them would start for some teams. And I think that the philosophy of recruiting these one-and-done players that John Calipari has done, it sort of came crashing down this week because they lost a game to South Carolina, which is one of the worst teams in the Southeastern Conference. It was a really ugly game. These players, I tell you, like the Harrison twins, much-heralded freshmen at Kentucky, they seem to have this philosophy of run into the lane, throw the ball up in some odd fashion, hope they get fouled, or that by some miraculous thing that it goes in. That seems to be the Kentucky offense. And the thing that became news this week was that in that South Carolina game, Calipari, who I really like, I think he's got the right personality to be the head coach at Kentucky. He's very good with media. He's good with social media. And he's pushing this. He's a good recruiter, and that's how he gets these great players. But he got a couple of technicals, got thrown out of the South Carolina game, then dodged the media afterwards, didn't talk to people in the media, and there's just been a firestorm. I think even the diehard Kentucky fans are starting to say, wait a minute, maybe we ought to develop some players that are going to be around a while and not break in a new group of players every year. All the successful teams, even the national championship team that Kentucky had a few years back, did have some upperclassmen. And this particular Kentucky squad, they don't play hardly any players with experience. Most of the minutes goes to these freshmen, and they're just not, if they are talented, I've maintained from the beginning of the season, they're not as talented as everybody says they are. And I think they would be a really good, formidable team maybe next year or by their junior season. And if they don't feel the need to you question, like, the Harrison twins and Julius Randle and these players, whether they're really, ready for the NBA. I think it's going to be interesting to see if a lot of those players stay for another year at Kentucky. They got a whole bunch of new players coming in. So the philosophy, the point is, the philosophy of one and dones is turning out to not be that successful, and contrast it with what Rick Pitino's done at University of Louisville, which has been very successful. It seems like there's a reckoning coming there, and again, at the end of the week, now the rumors are starting to come out that Calipari's leaving for the NBA. So I doubt that'll happen. I don't know. I don't have any insight into that. I'm not really a sports reporter or writer, but I do follow college basketball. I like it, and I like watching Rick Pitino coach and the U of L team. Okay, I have a little bit of glee at watching Kentucky flail about. But you never know. They say they might turn around. This point in the season, anything can happen. Any team can get on a run. Kentucky might do well. You never know. So anyway, those are my top five stories of the week. Appreciate you listening and sticking with me on the podcast. Now, my next guest coming up, Carl Schmidt, is he's got a phenomenal story. He's a really great guy. Grew up here in Louisville in the West End. Went away to the University of Miami. Was down there with Howard Schnellenberger at the when they won a national championship in football. Came back here. Was 20 years at Churchill Downs as in a media position, and is now with the Louisville Sports Commission. Does a lot of important things, and is involved in a lot of really what I would say cool projects. If you work in sports, people think that you got this great life. Well, he goes to the office just like everybody else, given the office is on the 23rd floor and he's got a great view up there, but they've got a responsibility to bring groups into the city and bring money into the city and run and operate events. And I thought it's a really had a really interesting conversation with Carl Schmidt. And let's go ahead and share that right now.
And I am in the office of Carl Schmidt at the Louisville Sports Commission. Carl, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, I've always been fascinated, as you know, with sports and jobs in sports and the business of sports. And I know you know you're the king of the business of sports in Louisville. Tell me a little bit about what you do here at the Sports Commission.
Well, I would say we're one of the players in sports, and probably the best way to think about us is we're a facilitator of sports activity. Our primary focus is on what's called inbound sports travel. That is sporting events that are either owned and operated by an organization here in Louisville, or that is owned by someone else outside of the community that comes here, and that brings with it economic vitality in the ways of people staying in hotel rooms. So the term we use, heads and beds.
Okay.
So when you try to drive heads and beds, that's the primary part of our mission. Attracting, hosting, owning and operating sporting events that put hotel room nights in play.
So everybody thinks that's got to be the coolest job in the world. You're working in sports and doing all this, but it's just like any other endeavor where you're trying to bring money into the city.
Right? It's a business, and you got to define who you are and how you work at it. We use a partnership model, and we also know that we are primarily a business-to-business organization. And if you ask our, if you look at define what are we, we're a sales and service organization. But if you ask our staff what we do, they would tell you we're in the business of creating experiences.
Okay.
Because for us, it's primarily about the people who come in town who play in the sporting events, their families and friends that, that come to watch, and the other fans that come to watch, and to a certain extent the media, and what kind of experience do they have.
Yeah. And what kind of events are these? I mean, these aren't like, I mean, we've got all these venues in town, but... I know, for example, one of your big events is the Ironman. I see you got a big poster on the wall here. You know, what's your role in that?
So that's so the Ironman. We actually have a contract with the organization that has that owns the Ironman brand and owns every Ironman throughout the world, called the World Triathlon Corporation. So that's an example of where we have a contract with them to bring that event to town. All the way over on the other end of the spectrum, in terms of how we do our business, is simply facilitating. Like, we work very closely with the three NCAA institutions in this community, University of Louisville's Division One, Bellarmine Division Two, Spalding Division Three, and help them bring postseason competition. U of L doesn't need much of our help. Sometimes they do. We work very closely, almost a partnership with Bellarmine and Spalding. We're kind of leading the way for them. But the Ironman is the one where we went out, found the organization, married them up with all the facility needs they had, all the permitting they need, helped them design the course, and then we helped them execute on the event.
So there's a lot of logistics, I know, involved in closing roads and setting up a citywide event. Now, I wanted to ask you about what the Louisville Sports Commission means to Louisville citizens. I know that you've got this like special program, and I keep wanting to get it free, but you've got this Golden Ticket thing, right?
Yeah. So the Golden Ticket is a raffle, and it's $100 for a raffle ticket. We sell 350, and you win a Golden Ticket package. It's a ticket package. You go to your choice, University of Louisville, University of Kentucky, every home game in football and basketball. Two seats to the Kentucky Derby, two seats to Kentucky Oaks, two tickets to the Bluegrass, the event at Kentucky Speedway, the NASCAR race, season tickets to the Bats, U of L women's basketball tickets, PGA championship this year.
So one person wins.
One person wins it all. Two tickets to every one of those events.
And there'd be some if they were required to attend them all. That would be a challenge.
The three winners, previous winners, have said to us, "My cup runneth over." You know, it's like they've become the most popular guy in town. Now with UK and U of L, and again, it's the winner's choice. They're not season tickets because we get a lot of these tickets donated.
Uh-huh.
So one week you may be sitting in the rafters, and the next week you may be sitting in the front row, and it's, so it's pretty cool. You're all over the stadiums and arenas. So
to get that, I have to buy a $100 ticket.
$100 raffle
ticket. One chance in 350.
One chance in 350. You can go to LouisvilleSports.org. That's our website, and you can find the information about how to buy a ticket.
Okay. Well, that sounds cool. Tickets are always an interesting topic, I guess, this town, because what should we pay? I guess your take, even outside the sports commission, tickets and ticket prices and ticket demands. There seems to be a lot of, talk about that and the whole existence of ticket brokerages, right?
Well, and you know, really, ticket pricing is all market driven. And so I was at Churchill Downs for 20 years, and we used to always think about how can we capture the true value of these tickets. So if Churchill sold a ticket for $100 and it was going for $500 out in the black market, if you're the people that manage Churchill, you're saying to yourself, we're letting $400 of value get away from us, which is now the secondary ticket market is actually working on behalf of the rights holders of events. Because now companies like even the NCAA and colleges and universities and Churchill Downs, they have relationships with these in the secondary ticket market so they can be sold. The other thing with Churchill is, you have to. They have other ways of extracting the value: premium seat licenses, mm-hmm. turf club memberships. You got to buy this in order to buy that. And the reason for that is they're trying to extract the value out of it that the market is getting.
Exactly.
I mean, and they're trying to get that themselves.
It seemed like, I feel like at U of L, even just having football tickets, like, how can I get football tickets without having to make the donation, without having to? But they're just trying to get the most they can for the product they've got, right?
And look at the budgets of athletic departments. Now, it's a totally separate argument whether you think that's healthy or not.
Yeah.
But if you subscribe to that you want your local university, Division I University of Louisville, to be very strong, you want to put a competitive product on the field, then they have to pay for it. And the only way they can extract it, they got media rights that they sell, and they do very well in that area. And then it's ticketing. And ticketing, it's all about how can the owner of the tickets, the rights holder of those tickets, extract the value that the market is going to place on it themselves without letting the secondary market, what we used to call the black market,
yeah.
you recall, now it's referred to as secondary market,
yeah.
getting that value.
Because people like me who buy tickets want to get them as inexpensively as can.
You bet.
You know, there's always tug of war over what tickets should cost.
It's all the friends that you know. It's how,
that's
it's
right.
how you get that done.
Everybody can't be like a media guy and ask for credentials, right?
Right.
Speaking of which, going back, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your career in sports, because you've had some pretty darn cool jobs. Maybe talk a little bit about Churchill Downs. You were there for a long time, but even before that, you were at the University of Miami, and I'm sure our listeners, you know, would be interested to hear about, you know, why would this guy from Louisville be at the University of Miami?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. So I started out as a football coach, and my dad worked in sports. My dad oversaw the Catholic School Athletic Association, the CSAA, that does the Toy Bowl and all those grade school sports. So I kind of grew up around it. My degree is in journalism, undergraduate and graduate degree in communications. I coached in high school at Bishop David. I thought I wanted to coach in college. I went back to Moorhead as a grad assistant coach. I was like, you know, this isn't what I want to do for the rest of my life. But I had these skills that married up where I had been around organizational sports as a youth growing up. I had officiated, I had coached, and I had this degree in communications. I thought, you know, sports information,
yeah.
which is the PR for athletic departments, might be something good for me. Howard Snellenberger is a Flagey graduate. I'm a Flagey graduate. I wrote him a letter, and he needed somebody down there to help support. And he was kind of like acting athletic director at the time. They had a very weak athletic director at University of Miami. I went to University of Miami in 1980 as a grad assistant, in essence, in the SID office. Single guy looking for the next chapter of my life, and it really changed my life. It's a great place. There 7 years. If you ever saw that documentary that was 30 on 30 the ESPN did,
right.
the one called The U, that covered University of Miami over a 10-year span, I was there for 7 of those 10 years.
Wow.
Everything. It was a beautiful time to be there. A lot of fun.
It was fun. I had a similar like experience at the University of Tennessee. So,
Married a Louisvillian who was in the first wave of Title IX scholarships. She swam for Plantation. She swam at the University of Miami. We got married. Decided we wanted to raise our kids closer to our families. I ended up at Churchill Downs for 20 years overseeing all the public relations.
Yeah. So, and you know, of course, that place, you're still involved, I guess, with them in your current position.
I am.
But
yep.
Churchill is changing a lot, and, you know, who knows where that's going to go.
Well, the one thing that people need to remember about Churchill Downs is it's a publicly held company, and the requirement for the management team at Churchill Downs is to extract the maximum amount of shareholder value.
Mm-hmm.
That's their job. And I remember Tom Meeker, the first thing he did when this predated me by a year or two, he took everybody's Derby tickets away from them. And he had a reason for that, because he wanted to establish the legal precedent that Churchill owned those tickets and that individuals didn't have a right to them. That's why the letter people would get every year said, you're invited this year to purchase these tickets.
Okay.
Tom was the meanest guy in town, but he was just doing what was right by the shareholders.
Yeah.
Plus, the other thing you need to remember is publicly held companies can be taken over.
Right.
And the headquarters of Churchill Downs could move to some other city. So you want that management team extracting value. You want them building value in shareholders, because you want that corporate headquarters to stay here. So I'm big fans of the success that the folks have had there. It's a great management team. People might not agree with everything they do, but they're still local.
Yeah, and let me ask you one question, and we'll wrap it up here about not to get into politics, but I've been following, and if you follow the Rusty Satellite Show, you know I talk a lot about the casino gaming industry, and I've been to events where Kevin Flannery talks about how important it is to get gaming in the state so that the racetracks can survive, basically, and the horse racing industry can survive. I mean, I'm guessing you have a position on that, and what do you think it's going to take if we're ever going to, you know, help this horse racing industry survive and get gaming in the state?
So pretty simple. We're sitting here in my office, which happens to be on the 22nd floor of the BB&T building, and we're looking at the Ohio River. And right across the Ohio River is Indiana. So you have a natural barrier, which is the river. You have a created barrier, which is a state government barrier. It's legal on that side of the river. It's not legal on this side of the river, but this is one economic region. So the beneficiary of a state law in Indiana is an economic beneficiary that's benefiting their state, their citizens. And guess what? All you have to do is sit by the Sherman Minton Bridge and watch people go across the river to go to the casino
right in
Indiana. So it's just purely economics.
Yeah.
And the argument about, oh, gambling is that, you know what? There are a lot of things that people get have problems with. You just got to deal with it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So to me, it's all economics. I believe it's going to happen someday. I hope it happens sooner than later.
Well, I do too. I've been sort of a critic of state government on that issue, and we'll wrap it up with that, Carlin. But I want to thank you for welcoming me up here to your office and hearing a little bit about the Sports Commission.
Yeah, well, we're kind of a behind-the-scenes organization. We try to do things that bring dollars to this community and do it on behalf of the community.
Okay, Carl, it was a real pleasure to visit you up in your office and learn about the Louisville Sports Commission. Thanks again to you and to Debbie Westland of the Jefferson County School Board for spending a few minutes with me this week. I sometimes don't know what's going to happen with this show, but every week we seem to get it done. So I really enjoy doing it and enjoy having you as listeners. Please get in touch with me if you'd like to suggest a guest, get a T-shirt. Whatever you like to do, I really appreciate you listening to the Rusty Satellite Show, and I'll be back next week with a brand new show and brand new interesting people in the Ville.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.